As always, this episode of the Talking Wolves podcast is brought to you by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Why not make Green King your go-to destination for this season's final stretch? With delicious food and refreshing beverages, every single one of Wolves' televised fixtures is on show at their venues. And with 900 sport venues across the UK, there's a chance there's one just walking distance from where you are. And watching football is way better with your friends and family. So why not get the squad together for some title showdowns, the race for European qualification, and nail-biting relegation six-pointers. So don't forget to download the Green King Sport app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there's a game on. Yes, everybody, welcome back to the Talking Wolves podcast. Hope you guys are keeping well. My name is Dave, and as you can see alongside me today, just the one co-host, we've got Mr. George Russell. George, how are you keeping?
I'm all good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, all good. We've got a depleted squad today, mate. Matt is out on his travels for work. Finney's out at the cinema, I believe. So it's just the two of us today. But I can see you're in a different location. I believe you're working away at the moment.
Yeah, I'm working away as well. I'm in Copenhagen, which seems to be where I spend most of my time at the moment, to be honest with you. It's decent, though. Now the clocks have gone back. It's actually lighter nights and stuff. Normally it gets dark at like 2-3 o'clock in the evening, but afternoon, should I say, not evening. But it's only just, about gone dark in the last sort of 30 minutes or so. And it's like an hour ahead of the UK. So it's, it'll be a nice place to work in the summer.
Yeah, definitely. You could tell because your internet's a lot better today in Copenhagen.
Yeah, I was going to say, literally, every time I work here, like it seems like everything works a lot better. So, yeah, I need to just make sure I'm in Copenhagen on a Monday.
And how's married life now as well? I think you have been on since you got married, but it's been a couple of weeks.
I missed last week, didn't I? Yeah. I haven't been on since the party, obviously, that, back here. But, it's good. I think, not a lot's changed, really. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. Like, it's nice to go and do the thing, but not a lot of chat. Been living together for a while and whatever. But, it's good, mate. Just got to wear this thing all the time, which is the problem.
I don't wear rings, watches, necklaces. I don't wear none of that. So I think when that it's going to feel a bit weird as well.
It's the first time I've ever wore jewellery in my life. And when I went to try it on and everything, it felt horrible. And then about two, three days into the honeymoon, like I just forgot I even had it on. Like, and I'd wear it all the time. Like, I've been wearing it to play golf and everything as well. Like, so it just feels like, unless you've now already, it feels weird not to have it on. So you do get used to it, but I just need a couple more to complete a knuckle duster, I think.
You've been up to much else, or has it just been sort of?
Not really, mate, to be honest with you. Watched the game on Saturday, didn't go. Budweiser let me down last minute. And then I know there was a ticket by you as well, but I decided to watch it on IPTV and have a bit of a chilled one at home, really. But I was obviously getting ready to come out here and stuff. And I'm here for a couple more days. And then, when I get back, there's I've got some plans over the weekend because the Masters is starting as well. So Masters golf viewing, some get some beers and stuff. So that'd be good, mate. How about you?
This week Zoom, but I was saying I did another podcast yesterday and I was saying how quick it's gone, but I suppose I keep myself busy now playing lots of football. But then this week I had the Burnley game, which I went to, the away game. I had Villa on last Saturday as well. This week's just Zoom, boy, to be fair. I'll do the football on the Saturday as well. And today my day off. I've been to the gym and stuff, but by about 7 o'clock I'm knackered. I had the under-21s game and I fell asleep watching it on just lay down. So I don't know if that's because I was tired or the game was just really boring, one of the two.
Probably the second.
Yeah, exactly. But some good to see obviously some of the lads that have been sort of on the cusp of the first team get some minutes, which I'm sure we'll have questions and I'm sure we'll talk about as well throughout the pod, George. But we will quickly touch on the Burnley game because we haven't done a podcast since that one. It's been almost a week since that game, but it finished Burnley 1, Wolves 1. Really interesting this one, George, because I think I know Wolves' form at Turf Moor has been atrocious. I think before Tuesday, we hadn't won there in six attempts. And Gary O'Neill mixed a team drastically. We saw four fullbacks slash four wingbacks start in that game, with Aitnori, Bueno, Doc, and Semedo all starting. But what did you make of that lineup, Joel? Because he mixed it up a little bit, dropped Tommy Doyle. Obviously, Cunha wasn't ready. Chiwomi starting again up front. Intriguing lineup from Gary O'Neill.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I think it absolutely was an intriguing lineup. But he hadn't got much choice, has he? Like, he had to play who was available, really. And the reality is, we haven't got a lot of squad depth in terms of senior footballers. I know some of the kids have been on the bench and even come in and done half a job, some of them as well. But I wasn't too shocked to see what he did, and I was just pleased that it actually enabled Aitnori to go further up the pitch, because honestly, we've seen it in both these games. For me, that's our only route to goal at the moment, really. If it's not Aitnori doing something or being involved in the build-up, we're not scoring goals. Mm. So I didn't mind it. I'd have liked to have seen, I'd like to see that there's no one available. You know, I think you could say you'd like to have seen Cunha being in and around it a little bit, but I think, you know, he's coming back from quite a bad hamstring injury, and we can't really afford losing him again or anyone when they come back either. He just took the safe route, really. And I know we'll go into the game in a little bit more detail, but actually, I didn't think it was the worst point in the world going to Turf Moor, really, with the situation, the squad. And I think they were unbeaten in four, or maybe unbeaten in three, after they played us, yeah. And I know, I think they're not a great side, but circumstances, you know, with what we were lining up with, I think a point would have took a point. Well, I would have took a point before the game anyway, put it like that.
Yeah, I think with the circumstances of our squad availability as well, I thought with how open Burnley were at the back, a full-strength Wolves attack would have certainly put them to the sword. I think, obviously, Leon Chiwomi started the game and led the line again. And unfortunately, it just didn't quite work out for him. I think he had a slightly better performance at Turf Moor than he did at Villa Park. I think you could see once again, and there was a few sort of running jokes on social media about Sarabia and the other lads not quite passing to him or finding him in certain areas. But that obviously just comes down to the trust thing. And I think Gary O'Neill probably saw that with the way he started against West Ham, which we'll talk about later as well. But ultimately, went 1-0 down. This is a sort of deep cross to the back post, Jordan. This is where the confusion is going to come when you're playing certain players out of position or certain players that haven't played together before. And ultimately, it's a guy completely unmarked at the back post. You'd probably say it's Semedo's man, but with Semedo playing almost as a right centre-back throughout the first half, that's frustrating. That's, you know, probably the first real big mistake Wolves made throughout the first half, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I think, it's always like looking at social media when goals go in as well, which is quite sadistic of me. But, you know, there's already people that have already got their agendas, both sides, which I found quite funny. There's people that don't like Semedo and there's people that don't like Doherty. And you could tell quite clearly on Twitter who was in what camp, because everyone was trying to pass the blame to each other. It was either Semedo's fault or Doherty's fault. And to be honest with you, it was both the faults. Honestly, I think Semedo is far too narrow, far too tucked in. There was no need for him to be where he was. And then Doherty should do a lot better from wing back, because he can see all the play happening. Semedo can't see what's behind him, right? And Doherty's in no man's land. There's no communication. And, you know, I think it's really sloppy goal for Wolves to concede, really, from defensively. However, sometimes as well, you've got to put your hand up and go, it was actually a good finish, wasn't it? First time finish.
Yeah, really nice.
Took it really well. Yeah, it's a poor goal to concede, really. And it's uncharacteristic of Wolves, of what we've seen at parts of the season where we've been very good defensively for the majority of the season when we had a full-strength team. It was a disappointing goal to concede, and people trying to pass the book on Doherty or pass the book on Semedo. I think 6-1 after the other, and half a dozen the other. I think they were both culpable, to be honest with you, with that goal.
Yeah, and going back to what you said about Aitnori, he was pivotal. Although it was controversial leading up to the free kick, but he's pivotal in the goal because he got the goal, but the work to win the free kick as well, unbelievable piece of skill to pick up from deep, a couple of ball rolls, 360 roulettes, whatever, Cruyff turns, however he does it these days, to win the free kick. And obviously Burnley fans have had a moan about that. I think even is it JJ Watt? Is it? You'll know better.
JJ Watt. Yeah, yeah. He's like a shareholder. He's a shareholder, isn't he? Yeah.
He moaned about it, but really leading up to the Burnley goal as well, they had a free kick which was very, very, very soft. So sort of it leveled itself out. But ignoring that, the ball again from Sarabi has been was brilliant, getting himself a lot more goals and assists. I think his goal contribution numbers are really picking up, Jordan, this season. But Aitnori as well. I know he's really stepped it up, but and he has missed some sitters, which we'll talk about. But again, his numbers and output has really increased as well. But fantastic ball in from Sarabi, and obviously really crucial for Wolves to get that goal, because I think Aitnori deserved the goal after all the hard work he'd done just before.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's twofold really what you said there. I think Aitnori's quality, he's now getting some rewards for the quality of the player he is, and I actually think sneakily moving forward he might be better suited further up the pitch. I know he's a decent defender as well, actually more than decent defender, but I feel like that sort of response, like lack of responsibility in terms of being able to play freely and go and do what he wants, it sort of suits him a little bit. And I'm enjoying seeing him play his football, and he's definitely enjoying it. And like I say, Sarabia, you know, I think the criticism of Sarabia from other Wolves fans, not necessarily myself, is, you know, he can appear a bit lightweight and a little bit bullied off the ball at times in games. But I think there's no doubt in that if you give him half a yard, and again, I know it's a free kick, dead ball, half a yard, technically he's top draw. And there's no disputing why he's been called back into the Spanish squad, because he's a very, very technically good footballer. I still think he could put a bit of size on. But for me, I'm a big fan of his. And over a dead ball, and again, we saw that with West Ham right with the penalty, I think I've got no doubt in my mind he's going to put some quality in.
I think sometimes with players like Pablo Sarabia, because his probably best position is as like a number 10, and with the way Wolves set up, whether it be, you know, with the five at the back and so on, that's never really... We've really struggled with number 10s, I think, over the years in regards to trying to get the best out of them. Morgan Gibbs-White is always the one that I pick out. And whether you love him or hate him, I think he was held back with his Wolves career ultimately because we never really played in a system that suited him. I think the beauty with Sarabia is that he sort of... Wherever he's played, he's almost... Although there have been some frustrating moments, and I think he was frustrating in that Burnley game as well, he has at times made the sort of adapted his game and adapted the Wolves system to suit him as a footballer. And it ultimately, it's worked over the last, you know, he's had to pick it up since the injuries of Neto, Huang and Cunha. But his numbers could have even been even better with those guys on the pitch. So I think he's been restricted with the players in front of him. But we'll talk about his performance against West Ham shortly as well. But second half, Jord, I was frustrated. I ultimately sort of walked away from this game at full time thinking, okay, a point's all right. But I genuinely think we could have got all three. I think Burnley had half chances here and then. And to be fair to Jose Sarr, I know he gets his stick, but had a phenomenal performance at Turf Moor. But we had chances as well. And going back to what I said about Aitnori, he had one chance through on goal, right in front of the goalkeeper. And very similar to an opportunity he had against Villa last week, shoot it straight at the goalkeeper. And I suppose that's when you say, yeah, he's showing how he's a defender and not an attacker now.
Yeah, for sure. And it's frustrating for me because I've had him in fantasy football for about 5 weeks. Yeah. And now all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, you've got to get Aitnori in your team because he's attacking, whatever. Yeah, you know. And honestly, like, I feel like everyone had him this weekend, but against Burnley, it still felt like there was still people late to the train, as it were. And when he missed that chance, I was like, you fucking idiot. More so, I was annoyed, obviously, for the fact of missing the golden opportunity. But secondly, I was like, that's three bonus and 5 points you cost me there, you knobhead. But yeah, I think if he could just add that to his game, and I think Gary O'Neill alluded to it a little bit as well, didn't he, saying like he's got three and four, but he should actually have like five and four, and he really should. That's what I mean. I think actually playing that bit further up the pitch is a problem. And if he can start adding even more goals, or at least consistency in front of goals, should we say, rather than more goals to his game, the world's his oyster with that lad. He could be anything he wants to be. Yeah. Really, really good.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he's still only 22, which is absolutely mad. It turns 23 in the summer. Seems like he's been here ages. And it's similar with I think the likes of Neto as well. They're all still really young lads, but they've got bags of experience already in the Premier League. Because this is the beauty of. I know we've had a lot of stick with our transfer strategy over the last few years, but if you go back a few years and you look at actually the amount we signed these players for, and you know the amount of game time they're getting, it's unbelievable. And not that you want to sell your best players, but I think there will definitely be interest in Ryan Aitnori come the summer. And hopefully this little injury that he's picked up this weekend just gone isn't too serious. Cunha eventually did come on, Joe. It's the first time we've seen him back on the pitch of Wolves. Probably the loudest cheer of the night from the away end, to be honest. Look, wasn't at his best. Didn't look 100% sharp, but certainly made a difference. You could see straight away, no disrespect to Chiuomi, but players were trusting Mateus Cunha a lot more. The ball was bouncing off him a little bit more. And, you know, we looked a little bit more confident going forward.
Yeah, started playing off him. It was a bit of a springboard, but I mean, I could tell watching it from home that he didn't look fit for me at all, and he didn't look like he was over it. Didn't look like he was overexerting himself or even trying to like make any sort of explosive runs or explosive movements. I think he was just trying to keep it quite simple, link the play up a little bit, and we know what a good footballer is, right? And we're a far better team with him in it. I think now in hindsight, now the West Ham result's gone, I think there'll be clamours for him to like start against Forest and you know, getting back in the team. For me, I just think after this West Ham result on the weekend, I hate to say it, I think our season is effectively over, and I'd rather just wrap him in cotton wool. I still wouldn't bother, you know, I still wouldn't rush him back for no, you know, for a reason now, because I do genuinely think our season will peter out, which is a shame. But I would much rather keep him relatively fresh, relatively fit, and ease him back into it. I don't think we need to try and risk him at Forest if he's not even 100%. I'll just keep him on the bench and then wait for him to get back to full speed. Because I think, you know, the worst thing that can happen for us now is, you know, he starts at Forest and comes off after half hour with a reoccurrence of an injury or whatever, when really, I don't want to say it's a dead rubber for us, but it's not far off at this point.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how Gary O'Neill lines up. I mean, he's got another week of training now. He's got another, 25 minutes, half an hour under his belt on Saturday. I don't know. I still think we looked so weak without, a player of that quality going forward. And maybe, you know, touch wood, if Wang's back fit, you could try and squeeze 60, 65 minutes out of Cunha and then maybe give 20, 25 minutes to Wang, who knows. But yeah, I could see after the game, Jordan, when the full-time whistle went, I could see Cunha and João Gomes having a discussion, and they looked really disappointed. I think Cunha knows there were certain moments of that game which Wolves could have, you know, could have got all 3 points. Obviously, the Aitnori chance was one. There was one where there's a 50-50. It happened twice, actually, 50-50, where the ball's loose between the attacker and the goalkeeper. Sarabia had the one. He looked like
he pulled out, nailed on
to win the race, and he pulled out. Cunha had one, and Cunha gave it a much better go. But I think, like you were saying earlier, he probably didn't want to risk getting injured. And then Lamina had a header just wide as well. Boubacar came on and tried to make a nuisance of himself. But it just wasn't to be, unfortunately. And our horrible run at Turf Moor continues, although it is obviously another point on the table for us. What I will say as well, I think I spoke, Matt might have mentioned it on the pod last week. It was my first time at Turf Moor, and people have said how much of a shithole it is or has been. And Finn had said it before as well. But you know what? That was probably one of the more enjoyable away games I've been to in a long, long time. Around the ground, there's quite a lot to do. So I parked about 15, 20 minute walk away. Went like at a Sainsbury's, walked into like the town as such where the stadium is. You got the Royal Dyche literally as soon as you walk in into the thing. Then there was a pub next to that. I think everywhere pretty much accepted home and away fans, because they're all pretty sound. And then you got the cricket club attached to the ground, which had, you know, all Wolves fans there. The worst thing is I walked 20 minutes to the cricket ground, got a beer, and I thought, I've left the tickets in the car. I had to finish my beer and walk all the way back. And then came back and had another beer. But I actually really enjoyed it. And they've replaced all the wooden seats. For people that didn't go this season, they have replaced all the wooden seats. But the chances are you're going to have to wait another 18 months to 2 years before you go there again. So, that was Burnley 1, Wolves 1. And going into this weekend's game against West Ham. This was interesting, George, because I think a lot of people, particularly after the Coventry game, just said, look, we've got enough to play for, the season's done. But before the West Ham game, and I mentioned it on the preview, you looked at it, we had a game in hand on West Ham and we were only 3 points behind them. So if we beat them on Saturday, we would have gone level, well, we would have gone ahead of them in the table with a game in hand. And at the time, you know, 3 o'clock on Saturday, they were sat in seventh in the league. So looking at the team, Gary O'Neill pretty much went back to, I'll say what we expected, but he dropped the striker. So Ryan Aitnori and Sarabia were the front two. We had the back five back to normal pretty much, although Matt Doherty was at left wing back. And Tommy Doyle made up a midfield three with Lamina and Gomez. interesting that you're, because on paper, you know, West Ham, fantastic attack. You know, Jared Bowen, Paqueta and Kudus all starting. But I think Wolves kept them so quiet. I said on my review, I thought Paqueta was awful throughout the game. I know he scored the penalty in the end, but I genuinely thought we played him off the pitch. And first half was really encouraging. Some of our best football that we'd seen for a while.
First half was brilliant in terms of when you take the situation of the squad depth and everything to it, and even, you know, West Ham being a difficult. So I know, like, the fans for whatever reason really want Moyes out, but yeah. I think he's all, you know, I think he's done an unbelievable job there. They've got quality on the pitch. I think if Gary O'Neill would have known the West Ham 11 before naming our 11, which never happens, I think he'd have played Hugo Bueno instead of Matt Doherty. Because I think he played Matt Doherty left wing back, thinking Bowen's playing on the right and cutting in and all that. And it was probably expecting Antonio to start up front. But how we played and how we set up and the dominant, like, I thought we were really dominant. Like, we were knocking the ball around lovely, well deserving of being in front. And then it's happened a few times with Wolves, not necessarily even this season, but more so under Lars and even like Nuno to some extent, where we were so Jekyll and Hyde between halves. Yeah. Nuno was more shit first halves, unreal second halves. And that, I know Lamine has come out in and said, like, you know, he's really not happy with how he played in the second half, but I don't know how you can be so chalk and cheese from being so dominant in one half to then being really poor in the second half. And West Ham didn't really change too much. I think they put Antonio up front, didn't they, at half-time. Yeah. But again, like, you know, it shouldn't change the game that much. West Ham could have been any worse, but we shouldn't have been that bad from one change. And it really, for me, really, really frustrating. Again, it's a massive, massive opportunity lost, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes with the changes, like, we've seen managers in the past, Nuno did it, Bruno Lage did it, I think Lopetegui did it at times, where you go in, and a lot of managers do it, where you go in and take the lead in at half-time, 1-0 up, and you just park 11 men behind the ball. And Wolves didn't even necessarily do that on Saturday. It was just, like, sloppy. Just pure sloppiness. And we gave them both goals as well, which is the most frustrating thing. But it's just daft passes and just the wrong decision making. And we just made life very, very difficult for ourselves. But we'll quickly go back to the first half, Jordan, ultimately getting that opening goal and taking the lead, well, taking the lead into half time. But brilliant work by Aitnor, wasn't it? It was a really interesting dynamic. I mentioned on the review, like, if you were like an analyst watching that game, and again including the Burnley game as well, with how Gary O'Neill set with four wing backs, with this game not really playing with a recognised striker and Tommy Doyle almost, you know, pushing forward at times, to see the setup of Wolves, it would have been really intriguing. But ultimately it was that man again, Ryan Aitnori, who caused all the problems, you know, driving into the box. I thought at the time Emerson had got the ball, but I suppose nowadays you can't be diving in from behind, because as soon as you catch any part of the leg, it's going to be a penalty. And although the referee had a really, really, really poor game, which we'll talk about, gave that penalty. And Sarabia, I don't know if it was an unbelievable penalty or just a little bit fortunate, but I mean, smashed it off the post and in to give us the lead. But yeah, fantastic work again by Aitnori.
Yeah, great. And again, like, just getting himself in central positions, causing havoc. And he was doing that even before he won the penalty, right? He was causing them a lot of problems, floating in between like their midfield and the back line, and just picking up the ball in half spaces and just driving at them. And yeah, I think you know, obviously Emerson was a little bit clumsy with it. I think it is a penalty. It's not like the biggest sound wall penalty you've ever seen, but there was enough contact there that, you know, and like you say, you can't kick through someone to get to the ball these days. And again, it was good by Aitnery and Sarabia, no mistake from the spot, really. A very good penalty off the inside the post.
Brilliant. And like I said, to take that lead in at 1-0 at half time, I predicted a narrow win as well, because I probably jinxed it, because I kept saying and mentioning how good I thought we were against West Ham at home. And like you said, George, the second half just completely changed. I really still can't quite put my finger on it. Mikel Antonio came on and caused some serious problems for Wolves. That was probably the one change. I think it was him and Ben Johnson that came on at half time.
Yeah.
But that was the one change for Wolves, caused us problems. And that's the sort of player Wolves have lacked, even in, not necessarily to start every game for you, but a player that can do that and just hold the ball properly and just be an absolute nuisance. And players like Antonio, we were linked with heavily for the last sort of 12 to 18 months. And a lot of fans were saying, no fans. And I've sort of, I was the same with Che Adams. I've sort of warmed to that idea a little bit more. I don't think he'd have the same effect as someone like Antonio, but I think for the low cost, he's certainly an option worth considering. But Kilman and Totti really, really struggled with the presence of Antonio. But I'm going back to what I said about the sloppiness, George, the penalty that we gave away. Totti and Doc, I don't know what they're doing. It's an awful pass back to Totti from Doherty, and it just obviously gives West Ham the possession back. And I actually thought it was Totti who handballed it at the time, but I watched the replay back yesterday and it was Kilman. Unfortunately, yeah, there's not a lot he can do about that, but just what the hell are we doing on that left-hand side?
It's just, like I say, sloppy play, stop playing football, lackadaisy, whatever you want to call it, just not good enough, really. At the top level, you get punished for those sort of things, and it's bad. And I think I know what you're saying with Kilman in terms of probably not a lot I could do with it, but I feel like Kilman at the moment, and I could be talking out of turn a little bit, and I've not always been his biggest fan, but I think he's had a very, very good season on the whole this year. I think the last four or five games, he's faltering a little bit. And I think, maybe it's a bit unlucky, just timing, but I feel like the Kilman handball may not have happened for Kilman about 10 or 15 games ago, because he was imperious. I just feel like everything at the moment is going against him.
And
there's no complaints really from me whatsoever. You can't have your hand out where it is. And there's literally no complaints. I think the people will be saying it's harsh or whatever, or what's he meant to do, but you can't have your hand out there. It's not a natural position.
No, and Paqueta, ultimately, after I said he was so poor, I was hoping that he would just continue that form, but no, he put it into the back of the net, and momentum just kept with West Ham pretty much, George, for the rest of the game then. But again, 2024, you can't be conceding directly off corners. I mean, I say in 2024, you should never, ever concede directly off a corner. This is frustrating. At the time, I said to, because I could just see from, obviously it was the opposite end to the ground to me, but I could just see the way that sort of Saar dived for it. I just looked at it and I thought, what are you doing? And I said to my mate next to me, I said, that's Saar's bad. That is, he's like, nah, no way. No. And I thought, who else is to blame there? You know, as a goalkeeper, you just got to make sure it doesn't go in off there. And I don't know how it swung over. It's not like he's 6 or 10 yards off his line, Jordy. He's pretty much on his line and it still swung over his head.
Yeah, he's I've said many times I've got issues with him, I guess. In terms of, I think we need to upgrade him in the summer. I mean, like, he had a good game against Burnley. I think as a shot stopper, he's great, but he's just every two or three games he's got these ricks in him and he just gives me kittens. And there's no one's fault for that goal other than his, right? And I know that people are saying, oh, well, the wind and all this sort of crap. I'm not being funny. You should not be getting beat off a corner at this level. And it's not as if, even on the replay, like the wind's affected the ball where it's almost got in at like a 90-degree angle or anything. Yeah, it hasn't. It's just a normal, it's just like a normal trajectory. It's just gone looping over his head. He was more concerned about what was in round and what was in front of him than actually like knowing where his back post was. It's just gone looped in the back of the net. And yeah, I mean, for me, and I'll say it again, I'm willing to die on this sword. Like, we need a massive upgrade in the summer. I know there's fans of Saar. For me, get rid. I just think there's just too many of these moments, too many individual errors, too many times where he's given away penalties. I'm not saying he hasn't cost us a point on the on Saturday, because, you know, you could say that about, you know, he won us a point at Burnley, hypothetically, really, with some of the saves he made. But there's too many mistakes for me, like, too many season, and you need consistency in goal. And I just think there's better out there, honestly. I really, really do.
Yeah, I think with all the rumours doing the rounds, it wouldn't surprise me if Wolves do go in for a goalkeeper this summer. I think every week now we've had one or two different rumours. We've had three, I think, in the last week. So it wouldn't surprise me. Wolves sort of said about 18 months ago that it was an area they were looking to strengthen. But I don't know. I don't think it's a priority come the summer, but certainly because it's such a difficult area to replace, really. But yeah, it's... Like I say, unbelievable performance against Burnley. Probably an 8 or 9 out of 10. And then that just mistakes like that at West Ham that ultimately, he's not the only reason, but ultimately that those sort of mistakes cost you points and cost you games. And Wolves struggled, Jordan, after that. They really struggled to get the foothold of the game. Despite, you know, West Ham sitting a little bit deeper and us attacking them. You know, again, you look to the bench. Who can you bring on? Cunha came on eventually. Hugo Bueno came on for Doc. Frustratingly, probably about 10 or 20 minutes too late, because at half-time, Doc may as well have put a West Ham shirt on. I mentioned this in the first half. He barely got a touch in the first half. He was all going for the centre or the right-hand side of our pitch. And like if you said, you know, he wasn't on the pitch in the first half, I would have believed you. Second half, as soon as the play starts getting directed down our left-hand side, just causing us all sorts of problems. And I don't know if I'm being harsh on him, but he's just really, really sloppy, really, really poor. And then you look to the bench, like I mentioned, Cunha, Bueno. Then you've got to bring on Boubacar, Chirewa, Chiwomi. I think Chirewa put himself out a little bit more. There's some questions on him, which I might try and get into the show afterwards. But the big talking point, Jordy, is that late header from Max Kilman. I think it was around the 97th minute, wasn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, no, 100th minute, I think it was. Was when it was eventually disallowed. João Gomes, great ball in from the corner. Max Kilman, brilliant header, top bins. And I think, happy days, Wolves have rescued a point, only for ball to be put on the centre circle. And they are having a look at it. Joe, this has been... And this is what's really, really, really taken the enjoyment out of football for me. This is because not one person in that stadium on Saturday thought, hold on a minute, that should be offside. The fact that the referee's had to go to a monitor to validate an offside is beyond me. No goalkeeper in the world would have saved that header in the starting position that Fabianski was in. And you've seen stills from the side view that Chiray was obviously, he's stood in front of Fabianski. There's no denying that. But Fabianski can see perfectly the trajectory of the ball and when Max Kilman heads it. Absolutely laughable decision to disallow this goal, Jordan, isn't it?
I don't know what they're doing anymore, really, these refs. I think, I don't know whether they've got a quota at Stockley Park where they have to get involved or interfere with so many matches a week or whatever to try and justify the wage or whatever. Honestly, like, they are so, so bad. The decision's horrendous. Like, it's an awful, awful decision. And I understand from the complete black and white of offside, not offside, Chirewa is in an offside position. However, he's walking away from goal. He's not even facing goal. Fabianski can see the trajectory of the ball. You can have three goalkeepers in the net and no one's getting anywhere near it because it's bulleted into basically the side netting, isn't it? Bottom corner of the goal. Not one West Ham player has complained about it. No one's even gone up in arms about it. It's never, ever offside in a million years. I can understand if it's gone half a yard to the left or right of Fabianski, because naturally then the ball's going towards Chirewa, and I could understand where you could almost come to the assumption that it's interfered. Well, he's in the way of Fabianski and he's going to block the goal. There's no common sense in it whatsoever in terms of no common sense applied to VAR. Anyone who's played football knows, like, it's just a goal. It's just a goal. And again, I know there's people saying corruption, all this sort of stuff. I really don't think there's corruption in play. I just think that the refs, PGOML, Tony Harrington, Howard Webb, are all useless wankers. That's all I can say. I was going to say something worse then. I'm not going to. There's honestly, if I was as bad as them at my job, I would not be in a job. Like, I don't know how they get away with it week in, week out, and just put a statement out there, or Howard Webb will go and have a laugh and a joke with Mike Clone and say, well, you know, we've gone through this process and we've decided this and whatever. Just fuck off. Just literally, it's just bollocks. Like, stop calling the fans. Stop trying to justify your mistakes and stop getting involved in football. Leave it alone. And if you don't know what you're doing, fucking go and work at Greg's or drive the fucking National Express buses. Just stay. Honestly, I just think if you don't know what you're doing, just don't do it. Like, get away from it. Stop ruining the game. Stop getting involved and fuck off. Literally, like, I've had enough of it.
The standard of the refereeing, I think the two referees we had this week are awful. And it's not, look, ultimately, Wolves didn't deserve to get anything out of that game with the second half performance. But saying that, the first half was really good. So, you know, on the balance of it, yeah, we should have probably walked away with something. The Burnley game, I thought Thomas Bramall was awful, the referee. But these two referees that we'd had over the last week are both fairly new to the Premier League. But these are sort of, let's say, in quotation marks, up-and-coming referees in England. And if this is the standard and the consistency that we're coming to expect, I think there's a lot of people that are going to start giving up season tickets and, you know, walking away from football. So, frustrating, really, really frustrating. And there's a lot of people on social media after that game. Gary O'Neill, you know, really, you know, gave his honest opinion on it as well. Pundits, I've not seen anybody, bar a couple of West Ham fans, not seen anybody argue for the decision. So really frustrating. It got to the point, Jordan, again, there will be questions on this, got to the point where I think this stuff like this is sort of helping it. I say helping it, it's sort of going towards it, is that it's getting to a point on, like, at 5 p.m. on a Saturday, I'm like emotionless. I don't care. Like, it's not like it doesn't affect me, because it's like I've almost come to expect it now. And that shouldn't really happen. Like, with football, it used to ruin my day for like two or three, like ruin my week for like two or three days. Or if we won, I'd be buzzing for two or three days. We're probably in the last sort of 6 to 12 months. It's come to the fact now where I think literally there's nothing we can do to control anything really. Like, you know, somehow it's going to be, we're going to be shafted one way or another. And this is another example of it, I think.
It just takes the enjoyment out of it all, doesn't it? And I think, like, you know, there's people spending hard-earned money to go and watch football games up and down the country, home and away. And, you know, how is it fair or how is it right that you've got these, like, inept, uneducated, entitled pieces of shit basically deciding if they want to award goals or not when they're trying to make up the rules as they go on? Like, for me, like, I don't want to be talking about referees like this. Like, I think refereeing is a very, very difficult job to do and treat them with respect to everything. But when it's not necessarily like the decisions that are getting on my nerves this year, it's like there's just the crass and the brass, like how cocky and arrogant they are about being like, well, yeah, whatever, like, and then they start branching cards and whatever. It's like, mate, you know, like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, you honestly are ruining football. You're getting big decisions wrong. And what will happen as well is, all that will happen is they're all in it for each other, they're all protecting each other. You've got all these, like, referee accounts online as well going, oh, well, you know, this. Like, they're all just fucking thick as thieves. What will happen is Tony Harrington will referee in the Championship or League One this weekend. I've not even saw where he's yet. I'm sure it'll get decided very soon. He'll be dropped from a Premier League game. Very sorry, Wolves. We've got it wrong again. And then he'll be back refereeing in the Premier League game in a couple of weeks. The only way that this sort of stuff will stop is, and again, I'm not for it, really, but, like, I think if it's not Wolves, I think there'll be a club soon where there'll be a massive protest or there'll be a big VAR decision where someone gets overturned and fans will storm the pitch. I genuinely think we're far off something like this happening. Again, I don't want that to happen. I don't encourage or condone violence or anything like that. But I genuinely think, like, we're at a point where a game will end up getting stopped because I think, like, fans have just had enough of it, just bollocks, like utter bollocks. And I don't really know what the right suggestion is. I think how the principle of VAR I'm behind. I think how in the UK, or in England, should I say, they've tried to manage VAR. They've ruined the game. They're actually ruining the game. Like, all we need, really, VAR in for is black and white decisions. In my opinion, strip it back to offside, yes, or like offside or onside, goal, yes or no, and just leave the rest alone. If it's not a black and white decision, I'd rather get a bad decision than overturn it, not trying to find good reasons to rule out goals or anything. It's just shit. Honestly, I know that people disagree with that, but I genuinely don't know how we move forward from where we are with VAR. I really don't. But it's not just us. It's like other clubs are getting shafted every week as well. There's bad decisions every week. I mean, there was one yesterday, wasn't there? Like, Madison, like, punched Ryan Yates.
I missed that. I didn't see that one.
Yeah, like, punched, like, a little jab in the stomach. And then Van Dijk, the week before, had... In the week, I had like Austin Trusty, didn't he? Like, I don't think he grabbed him around the neck, but he sort of like raised, you know, pushed him off to the face. And I think if that was Austin Trusty pushing Van Dijk, you know what's happening?
You remember Vinicius against Kilman? That came up on my timeline again the other day. Just absolute madness. And I think the United penalty as well yesterday was harsh. Wan-Bissaka on, he didn't even touch him, and then like Harvey Elliott like sort of trips up on. I don't know how to explain it really, but I don't think it was a penalty anyway. But it's daft. It's daft. And I don't think they'll axe it either because they spent so much money on it.
Yeah, they won't axe it.
And I'm sure there'll be, fingers crossed, it's the last time we have to speak about VAR and stuff again this season. But you never know. I think Nottingham Forest have had it quite bad as well. And that's who we play next on Saturday, Jordan. Forest struggling a little bit. They lost out yesterday against Spurs. Currently sat in 17th place in the table, level on points with Luton, who are in 18th. I mean, I would love to see Nottingham Forest go down, but I think they might just have enough quality to stay up, George. Although, you know, they've not been fantastic. Their form under Nuno has definitely improved a little bit. But they've got some massive games coming up. They play us. They've still got Everton. They've got Sheffield United. They've got Burnley still to play on the last day of the season. So you would say they've probably still got enough to stay up. If they don't win out of those games, they probably do deserve to go down. But in terms of lineup for this game, let's assume Ait Nouri's fit. Do you change that starting lineup? Does Cunha come in, or do you think he starts on the bench again?
I would just bring Hugo Bueno in for Doherty and keep the same 11. Like I say, I think if Cunha's absolutely 100%, you play him. But even if he's 90, I just wrap him in cotton wool. I think after the weekend, our season is as good as done, really, from getting challenging for Europe. Anywhere we finish now is a bonus anyway from what we expected at the start of the season. I think there's nothing to take away from that. It's been a fantastic season from what our expectations were. But I just think, there's no need to risk players for me at the minute. Like, you know, like I said, the worst thing we can do is get Cunha back out there and he goes and like, does his hamstring even worse or whatever it could be and he's out for 3 to 4 months or whatever. I would just wrap him in cotton wool and, you know, yes, we need him at Forest. Of course, we need him whenever, you know, we need him every game because he's such a good player to us. But we need him far more against Arsenal the week after than we will at Forest, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, looking at their last few home games, beating Fulham last week 3-1, drew to Palace 1-1. They did narrowly lose out to Liverpool as well. And then they beat West Ham as well. So they've been okay at home. Chris Wood as well starting to fire in the goals, and I'm sure Morgan Gibbs-White will be up for it as well. So definitely going to be an interesting game for that one. We'll talk about that on next week's pod, and we'll have the usual match reaction and fans react out on our YouTube over the weekend as well. Jordan, we'll jump into some questions now. We had a few on Twitter, but quite a few on Instagram as well. Now, this is the one that was alluding to earlier. We had Dan Johnson and then Moldy as well, who messaged me privately, basically saying, given the situation with VAR, in terms of both the terrible decisions and the lack of communication, etc., and another potential hike in season ticket prices, are any of you, like him, seriously weighing up the options whether to renew? And Moldy basically said, how much do you still enjoy going to the Wolves? What would it take for you to give up your season ticket? Now, it's quite an interesting question, this, because bit different for you, George, I suppose, because obviously you don't have a season ticket. Obviously you still go to many games, so I suppose it does still relate to you, because do you want to pay the money to go to the matches or not? I'd put something out the other day where obviously it was still probably a bit in the heat at the moment, but I basically put saying, I think it's time for us to find another hobby, because it's absolutely ridiculous how, this is, taking the mick. And like I said earlier, I'm just like emotionless now. It got to the point maybe 12 months ago where I think I've mentioned this before as well, that I was more bothered about the kids that I coached on a Sunday, us losing that game, rather than Wolves losing. And the fact that I run a social media page about Wolves, I think I should care about it a hell of a lot more. I spend 95% of my time looking at Wolves, reading about Wolves, talking about Wolves. I don't think I'd give it up, because I think it's just part of my routine now. And I think we've spoken about season ticket prices before. I think it's inevitable that the prices will go up, but certainly my attachment to Wolves seems to be fading more and more each week. And I don't know if or when there will be a time where I say, you know what, that's it, and I'll just walk away from it. But I don't know. And there was an interesting point I saw about Foden as well, about obviously Jeff Shee, which we haven't spoke about, but I'll talk about that in a sec, actually. Jeff Shee put that statement out over the weekend. It'll get to the point where maybe, obviously, as fans, we really, really want them to invest a lot in the club, but they could look at that and thinking, I could pump 50 million into this club and we'll just get shafted again by referees in the Premier League again next year anyway. So it's trying to find that balance. But I don't know where you stand on it, George, because obviously you're in a slightly different situation. But yeah, I think there will certainly be fans starting to, consider their options, especially if the prices do go up.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, my circumstances changed a couple of years ago with working away a lot, and I've still technically got a season ticket, which I probably shouldn't admit to on air, but I have. But then someone uses it. But then, fortunately for me, we get a lot of tickets through Budweiser, fortunately, a lot. So I still go to a lot of games there, and obviously we'll pay. Majority of weeks I'll pay if we don't get that privilege. I'm similar to you now, and I think what you're saying, I really echo it. I think I'm struggling at the moment, I'd made plans on Saturday after Budweiser let me down. And I think, you offered me a ticket and another one of my mates offered me a ticket as well for free. And I was just like, you know what? Again, don't judge me for you. I'll watch it at home. I couldn't really, not that I'm saying I couldn't be bothered. That sounds like I don't care. I do really care. I want Wolves to win every week. But I just felt a bit flat about stuff recently. I just feel, after the Coventry game, that really knocked a lot out of me for this season alone. And I think that, season ticket prices go up again, or season, just tickets go up. Again, I'm in a fortunate position where I can afford tickets. I'm okay. It could go up wherever it goes up, but I'd still be okay. But there's a lot of people who wouldn't be able to. There's people that have got young kids. And again, I haven't got kids at the moment, but, hopefully, they'll be not in the not so distant future, I'll have a kid and I want to start taking them to games and taking them. I saw someone put on Twitter, and it might have been Kimbo, actually. He looked for Saturday, for him and his two kids, it was 123 quid. And it's that in a day, we're in a bad economic situation as a country. 120, that's that could be your shop, weekly shop. It might be a bit dramatic here, but you can't justify those prices at the moment. And especially then, you're spending hard-earned money. People look forward to it. They're about to scrimp and scrave. They might only be able to go to a game every now and again, and that doesn't make them any more or less of a Wolves fan. They go to a game, and then that happens. It's literally, why would I do that? It's literally, then you're getting, you spend all that money to then, we were shit in the second half, we've said that, but to actually then get sort of cheated out of a decision by the refs, I don't know. But I think, I know we've said a few times about season ticket prices, unfortunately, we don't know anything or whatever, but the reality is there's still a massive waiting list for season tickets. And whilst it's simple supply and demand, whilst there's still a demand for season tickets, those prices just keep going up and up and up until the demand's no longer there. And that's not, I certainly don't agree with it. I don't condone it. I think Wolverhampton isn't the most affluent of areas in the country, as we know. And I don't think it's right. However, the club will just keep putting the prices up and up and up. And they don't care whether, quite frankly, if someone's sitting in a seat in the South Bank's got a WV postcode, a DY postcode, or they've come from America or anywhere around the world to watch that game. It doesn't necessarily matter, and nor should it matter, really, in terms of, for me, I think, you know, we're a Premier League club. It's an international fan base. Everyone's got the right to go to football games. But by doing that, they will be priced out the local fan at Wolves. There's no two ways about it, but the prices keep going up and up and up. Yeah, and that's the problem.
No, 100%. 100%. I'll quickly go back to the Jeff Shee statement, because probably should have spoke about this earlier, but interesting to have this communication from Jeff, because, you know, fans moan about that. And I think the last time, I may be wrong, but the last time we'd seen publicly, or, you know, he'd probably come out and said something, was about the sort of FFP situation at the start of the year, which he's sort of come back to. Looks like he's right, basically, with what he said there anyway. So basically, Jeff Shee praised Gary O'Neill and the coaching staff. He believes that the Wolves have done a fantastic job this season, especially under the circumstances with many controversial decisions. Obviously, happy with how it's gone. Sort of said there's been challenges and the club are going to learn from it and progress every season. Although we know the situation with an attacker, we've been begging for a new striker for however long. But then he's obviously gone on to have a little dig about the refereeing. When a goal is scored and not one person inside the stadium questions the validity of the goal, including both sets of players, coaches, fans, and even match officials themselves, it's time to question whether someone remote disallowing a goal is really what football needs. It is our sincere hope that the Premier League and PGMOL recognise the importance of addressing these concerns to uphold the integrity of the competition and demonstrate why the Premier League is regarded as the best in the world. So not as, I think Arsenal put one out, didn't they, a few months ago, and that was like really, really digging them out. And this is sort of a general thing from Jeff Shee, just saying, like, look, things need to improve. I saw Richard Keys had done a whole article agreeing with Jeff Shee as well. So take from that what you will. What do you make of this, George? Because I think Matt put a message in our group saying, what has he done here? But I don't dislike it. I think it's sort of the first time I've seen a lot of people actually side with Jeff Shee for a long, long time.
I think so. I'll try and keep it short and sweet with it, because I feel like we're going back over old ground with the ref stuff. But I think he's got a valid point. I think everything he says about the referee and the Premier League is absolutely fair. But what I would say is people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. I think he's got enough issues that he needs to sort out here with the club, i.e. spend some fucking money, back the manager. The reason why, yes, we've had bad decisions, but the reason why we are where we are now is because Fosen haven't given Gary O'Neill the resources to be able to strengthen the squad. Yeah. We're led to believe that, you know, Brouwer seems to be the one that I think that O'Neill sort of alluded to recently, really, when he said just for cheap money, I think it was Brouwer. We know that he was linked with Che Adams. There was a couple others. I know, like I said before, Bamford. Like, all these people, he just needed one senior striker through the door. That was all he was asking for. And they couldn't do it for him. So I think it's smokescreen. I think it's a real smoke and mirrors thing from him. Yeah, he's trying to. He knows that Fosen and himself, there, the goodwill in the bank at the moment with Wolves fans isn't great. And I think he's just put a soundbite out there to try and get fans on side. But for me, yeah, great. Nice to hear off you, mate. But we've not heard off you all year. We didn't hear off you in January when you weren't signing players. Like, in all seriousness, I understand he's got a responsibility to, as the chairman of the football club, to actually probably make a statement like this. But like I say, just, you know, look after what you're doing. You know, make sure that our team is adequately prepared to go through a Premier League season before you start talking about external factors, is what I would say to Jeff Shee personally.
I think that's more than fair as well. Move on to some more questions. Let's carry on. Should Noah Lamina get some minutes? That's a Rhino on Instagram. So at the time of recording, the under-21s game has just finished. He had just come off injured, although I'm hoping it's not too serious. But he looked sharp. It was one of those where could still looks very, very raw still. Wolves were 2-1 down when I when I'd come off when we started the pod. Sorry, so I will quickly check that. But looked extremely quick on the ball. A little bit, yeah, they lost 2-1 in the end. A little bit, what's the right word? He was shrugged off the ball quite a lot on going down, looking for fouls quite
lightweight.
Often. But, yeah, very lightweight. But in terms of his turn of pace, he's very, very good. And to me, it's good. If he comes off and it's not a serious injury, the fact that he's got another 75 minutes in the bank is good news for me. But should he get some more minutes? Obviously, I'd love to see him get some more minutes of Wolves, but it just looks like he's not 100% ready as of yet. Sam Gittins, Jordan says, are we still Europe contenders?
No.
We done with that?
I mean, I wouldn't have given a more elaborate answer, but no, it's done now. I think it was pretty much done. Probably after, with a few of the injuries. But like I said a few weeks ago on this podcast, that we probably needed to beat Burnley, West Ham and Villa, or at least probably get 7 points out of 9, because in the next, well, before the end of the season, we've got Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool, all still in the hunt, and, they will steam. Well, they're in the hunt. They could really give you a pasting, and I think all three probably will give us a pasting, to be honest with you now.
It's frustrating because you look at the league table now. I think even if we lost probably every other game this season, which I don't think we will, I think we will pick up points. I think we would, the lowest we'd finish personally is 13th. Because we are 12 points ahead of Crystal Palace. I can't see in 7 games them having a 12-point swing on us.
No, it won't.
If you offered if you offered 90% of Wolves fans 12th place, or if you offered Wolves fans, I should say, 13th place before the season, I think 90% of them would have taken,
100%.
But it's frustrating when you see the position that we've got ourselves into across this time, and it's sort of like, you've sort of peaked around sort of January, February, and he's almost just fallen off a cliff. Like we saw with Bruno Lage, what? We were like 5th, 6th under Bruno Lage. Where did we finish? Like 11th or something?
11th or 12th in the end, yeah.
Yeah, like it was mad. So, it is frustrating. But, yeah, I think someone moaned at me. I don't know if it was a moan or just said to me, Dave, stop mentioning Europe because, like, what are you on? What planet are you? And I said, yeah, before the West Ham game, like, if we came out of that, and beat West Ham, we would have been, I think, 8th in the league with a game in hand on West Ham still.
Yeah.
That's pretty much so. It's annoying because everyone else around us over the last week has dropped points and we just unfortunately haven't been able to capitalise on it. Out of Chirewa, Fraser and Chiwomi, who do you guys think has the highest potential? That's from Finney Lewis.
I don't know. And I'm not saying that to be difficult. I just think all three of them aren't ready yet, right? So it's very hard to now say this person will be the best player out of a lot of them. And I think the big thing or the big sort of reason for that is people are already writing Nathan Fraser off, aren't they? Like, he's 18 years old, played up front, didn't have much support. And then you think of like someone like Harry Kane, who had all these loan spells when he was like up to about 21, 22, where he didn't really pull up any trees at Norwich, Leighton Orient, Millwall, all these places. And all of a sudden, arguably the best striker in the world. I'm not saying that Nathan Fraser is going to be the best striker in the world. I'm just saying that actually you need to give these young lads a couple of years to actually develop a little bit more. They're all obviously talented footballers. I think if you put a gun to my head right now, I'd probably say Chiwomi would probably. And that's only from, seeing a little bit more of him recently. And also, England under 18, isn't he, as well? So, yeah, clearly something there as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Ben Gold, which one or two players from the bottom sides would you take next season? Or are there any championship players? I mean, you look at the moment, say the bottom three, you've got Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United. I mean, it's not huge amounts of talent. I think from Luton, Doughty's going to be a popular choice, but I think that's mainly because he's done all right in FPL, isn't it? Ross Barkley's done quite well. I think he's proven to be a Premier League player still.
Yeah, Barkley's got a bit of bad. I don't necessarily think he'd fit in too much with what we're doing here because we've got good midfielders here. I quite like Mengi from Luton, I think they got him from Man United in the summer.
Yeah, the defender.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's played England under 21. I think he's a solid looking player. Could do a job. Could be relatively cheap if they go down as well. And then from the others,
Sheffield United's not much quality there.
Not really. McAtee, but he's technically a Man City player, isn't he? I guess. Yeah.
Burnley. Again, Fofana's a dim. You know what? I'm not necessarily saying I take him. The goalkeeper for Burnley.
Murich was good, yeah. But then he made
ball playing ability was phenomenal. Yeah.
And then he made a cock up on the weekend against Everton.
Yeah, again, I'm not seeing that. Yeah. Colioso as well, although he's been injured most of the season. Sander Berge would be an option, I suppose. But again,
was Colioso the winger that played against us at Molineux and
got injured straight away? Yeah.
He had a good, like, he was like giving Tomato a bit of the run around when he 15,
he had a really
minutes.
Good run of form before then, but he's only just come back from that injury. Like this week. He's only just come back. So Josh Brownhill would be a player I wouldn't be surprised to see his link to him in the summer because I think he's available.
He's a free agent. Yeah, he's a free, definitely.
But yeah, let's wait and see. Let's see if we can grab one more question. We had loads on Instagram, so I appreciate anyone that sent them in as well. It's all pretty much going over the same ground that we've been on, to be fair. Any news on turning Tommy Doyle's loan permanent for a small fee and how he's performed this season? That's from Trevor. No news, Trevor, but I think it's pretty much a given that we will sign him. Absolute daft decision for Wolves not to do that. So I think that's pretty much a given. But Joe, that's been bang on pretty much an hour. Really enjoyed that. We've got spoke about loads today. If anyone's got any thoughts, drop us a tweet or if you're watching on YouTube, comment on the video. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you're listening on YouTube, be sure to hit the like button and subscribe to the channel as we approach, I think, 17,000 subscribers now. So really do appreciate it. Jordan, it's been a pleasure as always. Where can people find you if they wish?
So Jordan7 on Twitter and Instagram.
And I'm at Dave as a Party on Twitter and Instagram. And we're at Talking Wolves everywhere for the latest Wolves news, transfer news, rumours, all sorts. We'll be back this week on the YouTube with the pre-Nottingham Forest content and over the weekend with the post-match content and next week with the podcast as well. As always, guys, enjoy the rest of your week and I'm sure we'll catch you very, very soon.